Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Stop filling out your brackets for just a second as we bring you the good, bad, and crazy news for conservatives for today. And, Jim, this concept that we're going to be talking about in the Good Martini seemed to work pretty well when it came to getting Senate Democrats to actually produce a budget this year, and that was to threaten to not have members of Congress get paid until that was done. Now, Texas Senator John Cornyn, the number two Republican in the Senate, introducing the No Budget, No OMB Pay Act. That would basically withhold the pay for the director of the Office of Management and Budget and top budget officials in the executive branch until the fiscal year 2014 budget is delivered. And essentially, his point is, for every day it's late, you're going to get docked pay. And so, therefore, you will meet this deadline that every other administration has met. But for some reason, 4 out of 5 years, this administration can't. That would seem to be a decent motivator. I don't know.
I'd love to see it happen, Greg. Obviously, I don't think we're likely to see that happen. Just two kind of interesting observations about the Obama administration missing this deadline. Just earlier today, Barack Obama's Twitter account tweeted out, "Finish your bracket. It's time for March Madness," with a little link to the, you know, to which Nathan Wurzel responded, "Finish your budget." Now, last Friday, I was at an event down in Orlando, Florida. I was on a panel with Ruth Marcus of The Washington Post, who's, you know, a very nice lady, and she actually kind of took a little mild criticism of the administration taking so long to finish their budget, kind of joking that she figures at some point we'll see white smoke coming out of the White House budget office, so that means it'll be finished. And but I said, what this administration proves with the budget rule, as it proves in a whole bunch of different policy areas, that if there is no consequence for breaking a law, then there isn't really a law. Now, is there, Greg? You can think about that, the War Powers Act that did not report to military action within 90 days. It didn't get congressional approval for the military action 90 days after the action in Libya began. You know, all kinds of disclosure laws and stuff like that, appointments to the National Labor Relations Board. I mean, this administration is not afraid to skirt the law, you know, dodge the law, work around the law, or sometimes just flat out ignore the law. And unless there's a consequence, the law doesn't really, you know, it's on paper, but it's not really enforced. And that, thus, it might as well just not exist. So I'd love to see some sort of consequences to the budget law. My guess is that this idea will go nowhere because you'd need the president to sign it into law, of course.
Well, absolutely.
Even if he did, he'd probably ignore it, too.
Well, and of course, even if the president were to get it on time or whenever he gets this one done, his track record over the past couple of years of attracting, you know, actual votes for the budget has not exactly been stellar. Although, if he can even get one in either the House or Senate, it'll be infinitely more than he got in either chamber of Congress the last 2 years. So, you know, there's incentive for him to actually, you know, outpace his performance in the past couple of years because that
– just one vote. Nancy Pelosi, you can do it. You can increase support by 1 infinity percent.
All right.
0 to 1, yes.
On to martini number two now, Jim. And the president finally getting around to visiting Israel. Didn't really have time for that in his first term. And let's just say – he's only been there for a little over 24 hours, and I don't think it's exactly gone according to plan. First of all, the limo broke down and had to be towed away from the airport. John Bolton on Fox News said it was a good image of U.S. policy in the Middle East at this point and our credibility in the region. There was also, of course, this endless parade of rockets coming from Gaza into Israel. Iran is threatening to, you know, level every Israeli city if Israel launches a preemptive strike over the nuclear program. There's the chemical weapons situation in Syria. And if that weren't enough, one of the president's favorite news sources, MSNBC, probably gave him the hardest question of the day when Chuck Todd asked a question which led to this exchange.
Mr. President, I want to follow up a little bit on the peace process. You began your term, your first term, big fanfare, the Cairo speech to talk to the Muslim world. The decision to have a Middle East envoy early, you said you weren't going to let this slip to your second term. We're in your second term with the Mideast peace process. What went wrong? Why are we further away from a two-state solution? I know you said you want to talk more about this tomorrow, but I am curious to what do you believe went wrong? Did you push Israel too hard? What do you wish you would have done differently?
Look, the opening premise of your question was that having failed to achieve peace in the Middle East in my first term, that I must have screwed up somehow. And I will tell you, I hope I'm a better president now than when I first came into office. But my commitment was not to achieve a peace deal in my first year, that, or in my second year or my third year. That would have been nice. What I said was I was not going to wait to start.
Well, there you go. I think I can answer one of his questions. I don't believe you're a better president now than you were 4 years ago, sir. And it's always good to lowball expectations because I'm sure he doesn't believe he screwed up at all here.
You know, when you go to the optometrist and they put on those giant, you know, hanging from the device things through your eyes.
Sure.
And they go, is it this better or this better?
Right.
And after about like 10 minutes of that, you're like, you can barely tell the difference between the lenses. That's kind of like Obama now and Obama then. Is this better or is this better? Mr. President, it's about the same. You're you know, maybe a little better on stuff like missile defense or closing Gitmo and probably a little worse in some other areas. One of the things that is worth noting about this is I actually am not going to, you know, give Obama an enormous amount of grief for failing to achieve peace in the Middle East in his first term. What I will give him grief about and his whole party about, and you could argue most of the left's philosophy on the middle on Israel and its neighbors, is this belief that we could achieve it if the American president just tried hard enough. Because for 8 years under President Bush, he was too close to Israel. And, oh, the president really needs to pressure Israel. And the president needs to be going out to the Middle East and meeting with both sides and shuttle diplomacy. You know, I am one of those guys who really doesn't think you're ever going to see peace in the Middle East, barring some sort of really big philosophical change in the mentality of mostly the Palestinians. I think the Israelis would like to have peace, but they don't trust the Palestinians. They're very wary. They've seen lots of rockets coming over from their borders, and they just are disinclined to trust people who keep shooting rockets at them. That's kind of, doesn't seem like the most unreasonable position to have. And, you know, you look at the way the entire culture of the Palestinians, how they celebrate martyrs and all that stuff. So there is really not that much that a president can get, like, two leaders into a room, and he can try to make them talk to each other. But in the end, you've got two populations, and you really can't get there is no Palestinian leader who can go back to the people and say, hey, I just signed a deal with the Israelis. It's the best we're going to do. We're not going to drive them to the sea. We're not going to, you know, destroy them, their homeland. We're not going to, you know, throw Zionism into the grave, yada, yada, yada. That's why Arafat couldn't take the deal that Bill Clinton put in front of him. And that's why, you know, look, there is no deal to be reached. And that means the entire, mostly the Democrats and lefties world way of looking at the Middle East for, you know, at least a generation has been fundamentally flawed. And Obama, you know, basically bought into all of this. And he kept trying, oh, we're going to put more pressure on the Israelis, the settlement, something's going to happen. No, the issue wasn't really the settlements. The issue was that Palestinian culture is pretty much top to bottom committed to destroying Israel. And unless you change that, you really can't get anywhere. So, Mr. President, if you could talk a little more about that, it'd be good to see. I understand he's declaring Hezbollah a terror group, and, you know, they're checking all the boxes on this trip. I'm glad to see he and Netanyahu are at least acting like they like each other. we can speculate as to how genuine those smiles are, but I think both these guys realize that the other guy is going to be around for another couple of years, so they have to try to make the best of it. So that's the good side of this bad martini. Obama getting irritated that anybody ever expected him to have create peace in the Middle East is a very ironic bad martini for today.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think, as he said, I don't think anybody expected him to achieve something that's virtually impossible to achieve. But he set the expectations so high, it was almost like, you know, his message to Democrats in the midterms. Well, you've got me now. I can broker this because I come at this from a unique perspective and all this stuff. And he also had a comment in his answer about how these issues have been simmering for six decades. And of course, you know, the modern state of Israel has been around for six decades, but the issues that are simmering been around a little bit longer than six decades. So on to martini number three now. And Jim, this isn't specifically related to politics, but it's one of these moments in our culture that just makes us want to slam our foreheads into the desk. This is from Fox News. A Massachusetts principal has been criticized for canceling his school's honors night, saying it could be devastating to the students who worked hard but fell short of the grades. David Fabrizio, principal of Ipswich Middle School, notified parents last week of his plan to eliminate the event. The honors night, which can be a great sense of pride for the recipient's families, can also be devastating to a child who has worked extremely hard in a difficult class, but who, despite growth, has not been able to maintain a high grade point average. That's in the letter that he sent to the students. And so the parents are outraged about this. And so, Jim, the everybody gets a trophy culture takes one step forward.
Yeah, and it's usually kind of disturbing to see. What grades are affected by this, Greg?
Middle school.
Okay, because, you know, it's like, my attitude is like the later you get in life, the more unnerving it is to see this kind of, well, I tried hard mentality applied. Now, I'll admit I have a bit of a soft spot in this. At age four, my older son got a trophy for just participating in his team's soccer team. They didn't really play games or anything like that, but they're just introducing the kids to it. Got a trophy, and he was just thrilled to pieces. he literally spent the day polishing it. He was so proud of himself for winning a trophy. So I understand the desire to see every kid getting something out of an experience like that. In academics, though, either you get the right answer or you don't. You are what you are. And it really says something about the kids who did make the honor roll to say, you should feel bad. There are kids starving in China. You should eat your food because kids are starving in China. You know, yeah, you got your A's, but there are kids out there who got C's. You know, you should feel guilty about those A's. You should feel guilty about your achievements. We can't celebrate that. In fact, we need to kind of paper it over, and it's the demonization of success and accomplishment. And I can't think of anything more destructive to kids and what they need to do and succeed in life.
What would motivate you more? Maybe this is a lost art in later, more recent generations. But what motivates you more to do better than to know that you came up short? That used to be an awesome motivation, and now it's something to be coddled because you came up short. Just a sad commentary, I think, all the way around.
It was, and you know, Greg, how many people are driven in life by some sort of past failure, some sort of past frustration, something that they wanted to achieve and didn't quite achieve? You know, how many guys play better in their contract years?
Absolutely.
I mean, this is all the same. You know, reward for you know. And the other thing is also, it's not effort. Although effort is an important part of this, it also is ultimately your results. What is your technique? If you know, really, you know, enormous effort that generates mediocre results is, you know, like, you know, maybe you deserve a little bit of a pat on the back. But in the end, results are what it's all about. And you know, if God forbid you suddenly have a heart attack tomorrow, I don't think you want to hear, yeah, the surgeon tried really hard. He really gave it his best effort, and you know, that's good. That's good. You don't want to lackadaisical. You know, actually, give me a lackadaisical, brilliant surgeon who you know, over a guy who tries really hard but doesn't have great results. You know, neither one of those is a terrific option, but I'll get the guy. You know, in the end, it all comes down to results.
Yeah, and I, like you said, the later you go in life, the more it matters, because in the real world, much to the chagrin of the Obama administration, results do matter, and they'll just smack you in the face harder. It's just delaying the inevitable, and great lessons can be learned if you deal with that earlier. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.